Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is author Melinda Henson Neely. She is an expert in healthy living, nutrition, and running marathons. We're going to be discussing about her latest book titled It In, Not Out, The Learn How to Cook Book Without the Recipes. Good morning, Melinda. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Donnie.
I'm very, very excited. It In, Not Out is an interesting and informative book. It is very easy to read and follow. And, of course, this is your second book on nutrition, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay, well, that could take forever, but I'll make it brief or try to. I actually grew up in Tennessee, and my parents divorced when I was a young girl, so it was a girl threesome growing up. My mom and my sister and myself, mm-hmm. And you know, we didn't always grow up with having all of life's great luxuries, but you know, there was a lot of happy times to fill the void of what we might not have had materially. And then I left for school and went to University of North Carolina and was pre-med in college and studied nutrition and had a great 4 years there. And then rather than going to medical school, I decided to go back and get my MBA and become a marketer. And I'm not sure how that all transpired, but it has more or less come full circle in recent years, writing about health and wellness and kind of returning to my interest in healthy living that, you know, was rooted, mm-hmm. you know, years ago. So
mm-hmm. Very interesting. You started cooking at a very young age. So what actually got you into cooking?
Well, actually, what got me into cooking was that predicament I just mentioned. My mother worked full time, and gosh, I think about it, it was so different back then because, you know, my sister and I would come home from school when we were like in the first grade or second grade. Mm-hmm. And spend the afternoons alone, whereas kids would never do that today. But I knew that my mom was tired and needed help, so I started helping her cook when I was a really little girl, and I always really enjoyed it. So I just kept doing it as I got older.
Now, you went to college to study nutrition, so why did you pursue that degree?
Well, I thought that nutrition had more practical learning to it than just majoring mm-hmm. in chemistry or biology, which were kind of the common majors chosen by pre-med students. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, hey, you know, this is something that'll be beneficial for me to know regardless. So that's why and the other thing that was kind of my motivation there was that my sister and my mother were both overweight. My mom has had and still has health issues, mm-hmm. and I kind of wanted to learn, hey, what are some things that I can do to make sure I stay healthy, you know, that I can learn for myself. So that was another, you know, benefit to studying nutrition.
Interesting. When I was in college, I did take a semester of home economics. I think that's what they call it at that time.
Well, I think there actually still is a home economics major, but I just mm-hmm. don't think as many people major in it as they used to. But there's also health promotion majors. There's all mm-hmm. kinds of different majors today.
So why did you decide to write It In, Not Out?
Well, I ironically, at the time I wrote the book, well, I should say when I wrote my first book, it was at the time when the market was crashing and my marketing business was imploding, and I thought, mm-hmm. well, I can sit at home and feel sorry for myself that all my clients are leaving me, or I can pour my energies into something that makes me feel good and something that I've always wanted to do. So I decided to write a book about health and wellness, which was my first book, Finding Life's Secret mm-hmm. Sauce. And then I followed up with It In, Not Out because I kind of felt like it was an extension of the first book. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of healthy living starts with cooking at home. So that's why I started on Eat In, Not Out.
Very interesting. Can you give us three most important tips of healthy eating?
I think it does, as I just mentioned, start with fixing foods at home, because it inevitably, if you're always eating something somebody else cooks for you, you never know really what you're eating. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you make it from raw scratch ingredients at home, it's going to by default be healthier. But mm-hmm. the second thing is to eat healthy whole foods versus processed foods. Mm-hmm. Because if you eat things that come straight from the ground and you cook from there, then again, you're going to put good things in your body. And then last but not least, to eat balanced meals. I mean, we all need a balance of carbohydrates, protein, healthy fats, and dietary fiber. And as long as we get a balance of these, then we're going to be, feeling good, looking good, and all that. So,
what's interesting about your book is that you mentioned something about avoid the dirty dozen. So tell us a little bit about avoid the dirty dozen. And I looked at my favorite fruit on this. I'm really disappointed.
Well, I think the reality is, for myself and for many, many other people out there, is that we can't always afford to buy organic foods. I mean, mm-hmm. they are more expensive. And therefore, the Environmental Working Group has put together a list of those vegetables and fruits that tend to have the most pesticides, and those are called the dirty dozen. Mm-hmm. And so the suggestion is that, okay, if you can only afford certain number of organic foods, then try to get the ones that are on the dirty dozen list. Mm-hmm. And that includes everything from apples and celery and strawberries to lettuce and collard greens. So I can run through the whole list or just give you the highlights, but those are the ones that, if you're going to spend the money, that's where you should.
Mine is blueberries.
Oh, yeah.
And I love blueberries, and it's on the list. So
yeah, and we're the same with apples, and I'm still trying to, teach my husband, okay, if you're going to buy the organic, do it with the apples.
Can you scrub those things clean, technically, so to speak, or is this nope? Unfortunately, it's probably in the fruit itself.
It's probably in the skin. It probably permeates the skin. And so even if you wash them, there's still going to be traces there. But on the flip side, they say that even the traces that are there, it's still better if you ate a non-organic blueberry than if you ate a cookie. It's all about, choices, making good choices.
Interesting. Let's talk about the Clean 15 list.
Okay.
Tell us some of the items that are on the Clean 15.
And these typically are foods that contain little or no pesticides, and these include everything from onions to corn, pineapples, avocado, asparagus, sweet peas, to kiwi and cabbage, and watermelon. So these are foods that just don't require as many pesticides to grow. So therefore, you may not need to spend the extra money to buy the organic version.
Right. My favorite fruits are on there, watermelon and mangoes.
Mm-hmm. I love those too as well.
So I'm glad that it's on the list. One of the things, though, I've listened recently on NPR is that the history about watermelon, in the sense that over the years, it's gotten to be whereby it really doesn't taste anything like the original one that were years ago, because they have sort of bioengineered it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Genetically
modify it. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same sweetness to it.
Yeah, I think it's hit or miss whether you get a sweet one, and I've never quite understood how they produce these seedless watermelons either, but they've done that too.
What is the difference between all natural and organic foods?
Well, I think that can be confusing. And in fact, to read, to really have the organic definition, I have to read it because it's too complicated to remember.
Sure.
Because that, organic means it's an ecological production management system that promotes and enhances biodiversity, biological cycles, and soil biological activity. So in other words, it's grown as best as possible, whereas all natural is a little easier, which means it's grown without the use of additives or preservatives. So it's a little bit easier to spout off the all natural definition. So in many cases, all natural is good enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you can get a lot of those at your local farmer's market, I presume.
Right. And I guess to your point, that many times, rather than worrying about whether it's all natural or organic, if you do go to your local farmer's market and buy local, you know, there's a really good chance that's the best alternative for you anyway.
Very interesting. How about the difference between whole and processed foods?
Well, whole foods are those that, you know, that you get straight from the ground, you know, your vegetables and your fruit, whereas processed foods have had, you know, things added to them, whether it's preservatives or additives or, you know, colors or whatnot. They've had something added to them. And in some cases, the additives are good. But in many cases, the additives are not so good and not so healthy.
Interesting. Are there any particular ones that are really, really bad compared to others?
Well, you know, I've heard this this term used, so that's kind of the one I follow. If it's an additive that you can't pronounce, there's a good chance you shouldn't eat it. So that's kind of the motto I go by.
Interesting. How would someone go about in evaluating a nutrition label?
I think the important thing is just to read it thoroughly and make mm-hmm. sure that you've got a good understanding of what, you know, those items are and what they what has been added to the product you're about to eat. Another thing that's very helpful to look at is serving size. I mean, mm-hmm. particular with breakfast cereal, you know, a lot of times the serving sizes are so small that, you know, by the time you've eaten enough to fill you up, the numbers are completely thrown off from what mm-hmm. you originally thought you were eating. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, even in evaluating pizza and whether pizza is healthy, whether pizza is a vegetable, when we went through that whole controversy earlier mm-hmm. in the year, it came down to serving size of tomato paste and mm-hmm. how the government varied the serving size. So, you know, serving size is a very important aspect of a label.
I noticed that in reading some labels, if it's low sugar, it's high sodium, and it's vice versa. So which is better, to have the sugar or the sodium in this case?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, a person's, you know, body type and any health mm-hmm. issues he or she might have. Now, obviously, something that's high in sugar is probably not great for you at all.
Yeah.
And with salt, I think it depends on, you know, how much other salt you've had during the day. And, you know, salt, it does tend to be one of those danger added ingredients to things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it helps preserve things. Mm-hmm. But yet people can get, for example, with soup, you know, there's so much salt added to canned soups. And,
right.
you know, a lot of times it can be, you know, way too much that a person needs in a day. So, again, it depends on other things you eat and if you have, you know, hypertension and need to restrict the amount of sodium you intake each day.
Interesting. What are some of the foods that claim to be healthy but really are not?
Well, I think in general, if a food has to claim to be healthy, that mm-hmm. might not be a good thing. Because, you know, I don't think we have, you know, vegetables sitting out on the tray in the produce section saying, these are healthy, so eat them. But I kind of laugh now that I, you know, now with all the gluten-free labels, mm-hmm. I mean, you can go buy a bag of tortillas and it says gluten-free. Like, okay, now all of a sudden tortillas are good for you just because they're
right.
gluten-free. And
right.
we bought this great a yogurt dip at Costco mm-hmm. this weekend, and it really is good, and it's, you know, better for you because it's, you know, it's based in yogurt and not sour cream
right.
or cheese or whatever. But I laughed at the label because it was like probiotic dip. And I'm thinking, okay, do we really need to announce that this is a probiotic dip just because it has yogurt in it?
Right,
so
right.
I just think in general just to beware that just because something says it's healthy, that it's low fat or low sugar or low whatever, doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you.
Interesting. Now, I know a lot of people have been on gluten-free diet not because of celiac disease, but they just felt that being on a gluten-free diet helps them to lose weight and be healthy. What are your thoughts mm-hmm. about that?
Well, I think it's a very individual thing. My husband was actually diagnosed as being gluten sensitive a couple of years ago, and he mm-hmm. immediately cut gluten out from his diet and didn't mm-hmm. really feel that difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started adding it back in, and he's been perfectly fine and healthy ever since. But I do think there are people who are gluten sensitive that do have some symptoms which really inhibit their ability to live, you know, productively. So for those people, yeah, I think cutting it out is good. But But I think, again, it goes back to moderation. If we're, you know, if we keep things in moderation anyway, I don't think the gluten problem should be a problem anyway. So that's my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, that's true. Coming back to labeling, one of the nightmares that I think everyone have, including myself, when I go to the grocery store, and for me, for example, shopping for cooking oil, and God forbid, I mean, there are like literally hundreds of them. And again, that's where the label can say this is healthy. And then on the other hand, you see a certain amount of either sodium, I'm not saying sugar is in there, but the sodium content or the fatty content is up or down by a few grams. What are your thoughts about finding the right one for you? Because I'm to a point right now when I look at the labels, I'm looking for that hot healthy. And then I realized that the hot healthy, when you read the label, is not exactly as hot healthy as it is. So what are your thoughts about that?
You know, it is confusing. And I wrote a blog post on the topic because it does, I think, come back to which ones are polyunsaturated and unsaturated. And frankly, I have trouble remembering which ones are which sometimes. As a general rule, I tend to gravitate towards, we probably eat too much olive oil in our household because I do know it's one of the healthy oils. And so, you know, I just play it safe and use olive oil for a lot of cooking.
Yeah.
And then I also use a fair bit of canola oil for things where I don't, you know, canola oil is less expensive than olive oil. So that's a nice alternative. And then coconut oil, though, is not necessarily a healthy fat, has some, you know, there's been, you know, news lately of other benefits of coconut oil. So those are the three that I kind of gravitate to. And then butter, though I realize isn't one of those healthy fats or oils, I still think it adds nice flavor. So if used in moderation, you know, I use butter sparingly as well.
How can someone eat healthy foods on a budget?
I think there are a lot of things that people can do to, you know, because that's the biggest, you know, argument about eating in today is that it's too expensive. The reality is eating out is expensive. So there are a couple of things. I think number one is to plan, to really plan what you're going to get before you go to the store so that you don't buy things you don't need. If you have the opportunity to go to multiple markets, you know, you can definitely save money by doing that if you have the time. I mean, for example, going to Costco this weekend, we know what items we get the bargain, you know, which items are bargains at Costco and which ones aren't. And then where we go to our local Winco to get, you know, cheap paper towels and whatnot. So that's one thing. Another thing, and really a really great thing to make your cooking better, is to buy food that's in season. I mean, right now, for example, your blueberries and strawberries and other fruit, they're dramatically less expensive right now than they are in the middle of winter. So you can stock up on them now. You could go buy a huge container of blueberries. They taste better. They're less expensive. And then you can freeze what you don't eat. And speaking of freezing, another thing that people, I don't do this as much as potentially some other people, but you can buy frozen vegetables. If you stand in fear that you're not going to eat your fresh vegetables in time, and that's another way to save money.
Very interesting. Can you give us some examples of nutrient-rich foods that are very affordable?
Well, that was ironically something that I did in college many years ago. Was we were given the homework assignment to go to the grocery stores and figure the least expensive healthy food you can buy.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes what comes up on the top of the list are beans. Beans are, you know, a loaded, you know, they have lots of protein and dietary fiber, and they're super inexpensive. Now, the other items on the list include sweet potatoes, quinoa is another sort of, you know, I guess the end food right now because it has, again, lots of protein and lots of fiber and not too terribly expensive. And then one of something I read also recently that one of the nature's most nutrient-dense foods is broccoli. So that's another example of a food where you can get a lot of nutrients for the money.
And you talk about tofu also because I like tofu, and they're fairly inexpensive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that tofu is necessarily super inexpensive, but if you compare buying tofu to buying chicken, there's no comparison. So a lot of times I do substitute tofu for recipes that call for chicken because to me it tastes just as good, if not better, and it's far less expensive.
Are there tricks to buy healthy foods when you walk into a grocery store?
I think as much as possible, it tends to be that grocery stores are arranged so that the Whole Foods are around the outer edge of the store.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of what's in between are a lot of the processed foods and ice cream and Cokes and crackers and things like that. So
yeah.
So that's one strategy. You know, another strategy is to go, you know, when you're not hungry. That one we've heard many times before, but it's really true. And then my big one is to not go with my little boy because I tend to walk out of there with way too many chips when I take him with me because I bribe him, you know, by keeping him quiet. Okay, I'll get you some chips if you'll just be good.
Very interesting. Is there a correlation between eating healthy and nutritious food with weight loss?
I tend to think so, or at least weight maintenance,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that if we focus on eating those healthy whole foods and eating well, then, you know, counting calories and, you know, weighing portion sizes isn't such an issue. And we, by default, are going to eat, you know, not only healthier foods, but lower calorie foods that, you know, make it much easier to maintain weight.
That's true. Very true. How did you get all the various contributors to write for your book?
Well, I, for those of you who don't know, I did have different food bloggers as well as just food experts contribute to each of the sections of my book. And so what I did to do that was I, you know, whatever topic for that mm-hmm. given section was, I researched people that I thought would be a great resource for that particular topic. And then, you know, I reached out to them either by phone or email or whatnot and asked them if they'd be willing to read the section of the book and provide comments. And mm-hmm. And that's how I was able to get them to do so.
Your book is very well written because it does have the section where it basically tells people how to use the book. And I thought that's very, very important because a lot of times when you get a how-to book, you would just automatically jump on the specific page that
right,
you want
exactly.
information to. And I think that may sometimes defeat its point because it's to really understand the process because your book is about the psychology of eating healthy and to prep your mind in that right direction. So if you were to follow the step-by-step, it would really help to transform you from inside out, from a mental preparedness to really for you to be able to sustain a long-term success results from that, I believe.
Right. Right. I really like what you just said, so I'd like to write that down so I can repeat it back.
But it's true. I mean, it's very well written from that perspective because it walks you through and prepare yourself mentally because you're making that paradigm shift. This is not a quick fix. This is a behavior change. This is something that you have to go through and really commit to a lifestyle change. And it's not that adverse. It's once you go through because you embed that as part of your routine. That's what I got mm-hmm. from reading your book.
Yeah, and I grew up on a Southern diet of butter, cream, and sugar, and my body got used to eating that way. And then, you know, what I decided is when I made that shift, you know, I didn't think food could taste good if it didn't have butter and cream in it. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought, well, gosh, you know, it's just going to be horrible. And, you know, what I've learned is through making some of these dietary changes, making some of those habits and those mental changes, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. is that I'm like, oh, wow, food can really taste good. I didn't realize that. If you use fresh herbs and you know, do these different things that I just didn't even think about when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips you can share with parents on how to teach their children to eat well and be healthy?
Yeah, I got these tend to be my most popular posts on my blog, so I think this is a topic that's near and dear to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go probably, in fact, I think this is going to be my fourth book because I feel pretty passionately about it. But
mm-hmm.
I think first and foremost, we don't want to hear it, but it's true, is to set a good example. Because if we're sitting and saying, you know, our children are not eating their vegetables, my first thing is, are you eating your vegetables? Because if the parents aren't eating vegetables, the kids aren't going to.
Yeah.
Um, So I think that's a first step. I think another thing is to introduce vegetables gradually. I mean, I wouldn't start out at age four and put Brussels sprouts on the table, because that doesn't tend to be the first vegetable that a child gravitates toward. Mm-hmm. So start with easier stuff like broccoli and sweet potatoes, and then gradually introduce other ones. I think another thing is to be persistent. You know, if the child says, oh, no, I don't like this, you know, the answer isn't to go, okay, I'll never serve it again. It's to keep trying, because a lot of time it takes a while for a child's palate to adapt to a new flavor. So, you know, give them time and let them learn to like it. So, I mean, those are a few tips that I could go on and on, because I think there are a lot of things we can do to ensure that our children are eating well.
Interesting. The kitchen is, of course, the hub to eating healthy. How can someone prep their kitchen to reflect that?
Well, I think that there's always the opportunity to go through and look at your cupboard and even your refrigerator and say, okay, what don't I need anymore? What can I throw out? Either is it too old and it shouldn't be there in the first place, or is it unhealthy and do I really need, you know, five boxes of brownie mix? You know, there's an opportunity to get those items, to donate them somehow and give, you know, rather than just throwing them away. Mm-hmm. But it's also an opportunity to go, okay, now what can I replace that with, or that's a healthier alternative. So I do think that analysis of what's in your cupboard and that cupboard makeover is something you use pretty frequently, because it's pretty amazing how quickly things can start to pile up. I just moved, so I know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then to stock up on healthier alternatives.
That's true. Any idea on some of the healthy alternatives that you need to stock up with?
You know, I think just in general, getting rid of the processed foods, and then, you know, when you're stocking back up, you know, ironically, I probably end up with less things in the cupboard and more things in the fridge, because the healthy whole stuff tends to either be, you know, items that, like apples or other fruit that sit on the counter, or it's, you know, vegetables that go in the fridge. So that tends to be what I stock up on when I go through those purging moments.
You talk about things that are important to have in the kitchen, and you sort of give us a list of must-have kitchen appliances and apparatus. Tell us some of the must-have items in your kitchen to kind of get you in the mindset of creating this wonderful place in your house to prop you up to move in the right direction in terms of healthy living.
Okay, sure. You know, I think there's some basic, easy things, like, you know, some utensils that we want to have, and saucepans and frying pans and whatnot. But there are other things that I think make the cooking process easier. And among these are, you know, a really nice knife or two. They are expensive, but they last forever. And I that is the one thing that if I'm going to put money into, it's going to be a good knife, because that makes the prep work is often the thing that takes the longest anyway. So if you have a good knife, it makes it more fun. You know, and something like a food processor is another expensive item, but something that can make the cooking fun, more fun and more easy. And then, you know, a blender, a slow cooker, these again are more appliance-oriented things, but things that can also facilitate, you know, easier effort in the kitchen. And I do think having, you know, a fair share of, you know, and not, you know, a couple of nice pans and saucepans makes cooking a little bit more fun too.
Interesting. And of course, we talk about the psychology of getting yourself to the mindset of eating healthy and living healthy. So what is right brain cooking all about?
Well, you know, I say this, and that's where the old chemistry classes come back to, because I think when you're cooking, there's a nice combination of sort of creative, right-brained techniques, and then there's sort of the left-brained, where there's a little bit more functional, analytical, you know, process involved. And I think, you know, in terms of, you know, inspiring creativity in the kitchen, there's everything from reading cookbooks and magazines to watching your favorite kitchen show to hanging out with friends and, you know, eating their good dishes and saying to yourself, okay, what can they teach me that I can do when I go back home? And another thing that I've written quite a few blog posts on, which I kind of have fun with, is when I do go out to eat and I have a dish that's just absolutely delicious, I try to go back and recreate it from scratch. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but it is a lot of fun to do.
And how about left brain cooking?
I think the biggest thing with left brain cooking is to do a better job of planning. And given that I'm not the world's best planner, that I completely recognize how much it can make your cooking life easier. Everything from planning what you buy at the grocery store to planning out your meals in advance so that it's less stressful when you're actually, you know, at 5 o'clock trying to carry out that chore. The other thing is to buy fresh and to buy seasonal. And another thing in terms of left brain is I know everyone has their favorite, you know, fallback or their own staple that, okay, no matter what, my family likes this. And those are great meals to kind of have in your back pocket when you just don't feel like being creative. So
you talk a lot about how to really get psychologically psyched up to eat healthy and, of course, the way you prepare food and so forth. So my next question is, how can we make eating in more fun and engaging than eating out for the family?
Yeah, I think it's like everything in life. A little variety is a good thing. And I think just in general, having it be a family time is the first most important step to take. I remember watching that movie, The Blind Side, when they brought Michael Orr into the house. And he didn't understand why people weren't sitting at the dining table instead of in front of the TV.
Right.
And that turned out to be a really momentous thing in their family, that they started having this nice dinner time together. I mean, it's definitely something that seems to be lost in our current culture. So I think that's first and foremost. But then again, there's other opportunities. Okay, the NBA finals are starting tonight. Maybe you have some sort of, you know, basketball-themed meal to make it more fun. We've done that when Boise State plays. We're a big Boise State fans, and we've created, like, a football field on a piece of paper and made a big, fun occasion out of it. So, there's all kinds of things. But, you know, just make it a fun family time and have some fun with it.
Very interesting. One of the things you talk about in the book is the importance of dressing up dinner so that it looks pretty. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I have to definitely provide a disclaimer here that the Martha Stewart jeans, when handed out in my family, were not given to me. So this is something I have to work at because it doesn't come naturally. And in fact, my husband is a graphic designer, and I always say when he prepares his meals for the family, they're far prettier than when I do it. But I do think it doesn't necessarily have to mean that it looks like something that just came from a restaurant. But there's little things, and I think I have the most fun with this with my child, because he likes to decorate the table with things he's drawn, whether it's a placemat or a nameplate or something like that. You know, that's a fun way to dress up the table. Or maybe you're eating, you don't have to go out and buy an expensive bouquet of flowers. You could go pick something green from your yard and put it on the table and add some color to the table. So there's little things that don't cost a lot that can be, again, add to that fun atmosphere of dinner that also make your table look prettier.
Do you engage your son in the cooking process and prepping process?
Well, you know, it's funny. He was very interested in helping me when he was younger, and now he's kind of, and then he kind of lost his interest, but we just went through a way for him to make some money. He's obsessed with making money, and he told me that one of the ways he wanted to make money was to help me cook dinner. So we'll see if he follows through on that one, but he says he wants to help me again, and he definitely loves helping me in the garden when I'm growing vegetables. And so it kind of starts with the garden and then works its way slowly to the kitchen.
I presume now, do you have your own garden and so forth, vegetable gardens that you get your fresh vegetables from and so forth?
Yes, we do. And in fact, I just moved into a new home, so I don't have my wonderful garden that I had at my old house, so we're going to have to wait till next year for that. But we are limited in the climate in Boise as to what we can grow. But, you know, we try to grow whatever we can and have it, because not only is it less expensive, but it tastes better, and it's better for the environment to grow it at home. So it's just all those wonderful combinations that, yes, we try to do what we can.
Interesting. one of the greatest challenges that people have is to take a recipe that they like, a meal that they like, and make it healthier and less fattening. How can someone go about in doing so without really taking away the flavor, the taste of that food?
Yeah, I mean, as I've mentioned, you know, I've definitely had to learn how to do this growing up on a Southern diet. And I think the first thing that I did was realize that, you know, I don't need a whole stick of butter in that dish. You know, maybe I could just put a tablespoon instead of a stick. And you'll be amazed at how you can still have flavor and yet you've just cut out lots of, you know, unhealthy fat and calories. You can use less mayonnaise or, you know, if a recipe says to cook something in a 1 inch, 1 inches of oil, just put a fourth of an inch of oil. I mean, just little things like that. A lot of recipes call for bacon, to use bacon as something to flavor dishes. And bacon is a wonderful thing to flavor food, but you might not need to use six pieces. Just use one. You know, so it's not always cutting out as much as it is cutting back. And I think a lot of people often probably use like a low-fat version of food to cut out calories, and sometimes that works. I find that works well with something like sour cream. But with cheese, I'm a little more reluctant because I feel like a good, strong, sharp cheddar has more flavor, so I don't need as much of it as I might a low-fat cheese.
Interesting. Your book also speaks about understanding cooking languages. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I actually heard a story on NPR that brought that inspired this chapter in my book where some gentleman was trying to follow a recipe, and it said to fan out the vegetables. I can't remember if it was potatoes or what he was doing, but it said to fan the vegetables. And he literally got a fan out of the closet and was putting it on the vegetables he just cut, whereas what it really meant was to lay them out like a fan. So it made me think that there's probably a lot of people that go look at a recipe and don't understand what the different terms mean. And so that's why I dedicated a chapter to just, you know, basic cooking terms that we hear and see in recipes and may not know what they mean.
In your book, you talk about measurements, being precise on your measurements. I cook from a standpoint of a smidgen of this, a dash of that.
Yes.
So that's a little tough to kind of convert to measurements.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's funny, too, because if you watch Rachel Ray, she's always about, you know, circling the pan. And I'm a huge Jamie Oliver fan, and he put glugs of wine glass glugs in lots of recipes. So I'm more like you. I tend to be a little more, especially if I'm preparing something for a main dish, something, you know, for dinner. It's much easier to be less precise. Whereas if you're baking, you know, cake or bread or something, you have to be a little bit more precise when you're baking.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, if not, it doesn't turn out what it needs to turn out to, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Your souffle may flop if you're not precise with the souffle.
What would you like your readers to gain from reading It In, Not Out?
Well, I really think like all things in life, whether, you know, as you're attempting to lead a healthier lifestyle, that often it's just little things that can make a difference. And it's not always, you know, something monumental. It's little tweaks that, you know, make lasting habits, whether it's cooking to reduce the fatting calories like we just discussed, or maybe it's adding something simple that's going to really boost the flavor, like lemon or garlic or fresh herbs. It really doesn't take a lot of effort to make something taste good. So so I hope that would be a big takeaway. Not only to make it taste good, but make it healthier and have, you know, establish healthier habits in the process.
Where can someone go to get your book and keep up with your latest happenings?
You know, my books are available, you know, pretty much anywhere online. But I guess it's in this day and age, that means Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And my blog, which is MelindaHensonNeely.com, has a lot of different posts. You know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I wrote a post about, you know, the different types of oils and fats, and then different types of fitness opportunities for people. And then the other thing it has, since my book, Eat In, Not Out, doesn't have the recipes, my blog actually does. So So I incorporate a lot of recipes on my blog as well.
A lot of challenges that people are facing right now is work-life balance, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And you obviously have been able to maintain that. You're a businesswoman, you're an author, you're a mom, and you're juggling everything together. So any tips to people out there who really wants to do this, but then finding themselves living in a crisis mode all the time?
Right. You know, I think, you know, we all have crisis modes, and I think to accept that, that there will be those crisis modes is one thing. You know, life can't always be smooth and easy, mm-hmm. and that's just the way it is. But I think if you can take a step back and realize that, okay, sometimes we create our own dramas in our mm-hmm. lives, whether it's mm-hmm. at work or at home or whatever, if you can take a step back and, you know, view a situation within a bigger picture, you can go, okay, really it's not that big of a deal, and let's just relax and live in the moment a bit more. And I think, you know, that's something I always strive to do a better job of, is really doing just that, which is living in the moment so that things don't become so stressful and such an emergency all the time. So I guess we all need to do a better job of that.
Do you have a type A personality?
Yeah, I do. So the biggest thing for me is like, okay, slow down. I guess that could be another hint to be less stressed. It's just to slow down
mm-hmm.
and take a deep breath and just say, you know, I don't have to steamroll through my day. Other people can help me out too, and I don't have to do everything myself. And that's another great thing to learn as well.
Very interesting. You have recently completed your 16th marathon, and you ran in the Boston Marathon in April. When did you first start running marathons?
You know, I actually started running when I was in the seventh grade, and I had a goal mm-hmm. then that one day before I died, I was going to run a marathon. And then I think when I turned 30, I went to watch the New York Marathon. Mm-hmm. And that's when I just said, I have to do it. You know, that I was just really sold that first time I watched.
Yeah.
And so that was back before they had their incredibly judicious lottery system. So I applied the mm-hmm. next year and got in and ran my first marathon. I think I was 31 years old when I did.
Very interesting. So what is a typical marathon schedule looks like for you in terms of training and getting ready from the physical aspects of it as well as the diet aspects of it?
Well, you know, the physical aspect has changed as I've gotten older. I'm 48 now, so I can't run every day like I used to be able to, because if I did, I'd be injured mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. So I've reduced my training schedule back to running 3 days a week, and then I do other sorts of exercise on the other days. And then I have, you know, one day of kind of a short run, one day of a speed workout, and then one day of a long run. So the time commitment to training for a marathon is really not anywhere near as extensive as I think people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of diet, I kind of eat. I don't really change a whole lot. In fact, mm-hmm. when I was in Boston visiting my friends before the marathon, it was a couple nights before, and I ordered a beer with dinner. My friend was like, "You're drinking a beer and you're about to run a marathon?" And I'm like, you know, I don't really change my habits that much,
except
for that I'm very careful about hydrating. I'm very careful about getting a nice balance and enough. I probably bump up my carbohydrates a little. I don't eat nothing but carbs, but I make sure that I have enough carbs, and I'm just making sure I'm eating well. You know, no slip-ups during those days leading up to a marathon.
Interesting. Now, the nation as a whole is battling obesity. What are mm-hmm. some of the general recommendations do you have for someone who wants to start exercising?
I just think in general with exercise, it's about finding something we love doing and making it a habit. And, you know, not everybody wants to run marathons and or run 5 feet for that matter. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you prefer to walk, then walk, you know, or mm-hmm. hike, or maybe you like to play tennis or ride bikes or do Zumba at the gym. And it doesn't matter as long as it makes you happy and it makes and you do it, whether it's 10 minutes a day or an hour a day. You know, don't worry about how long you're doing it. Just do it, to quote the Nike slogan. So I think that really is, you know, instrumental. And, you know, taking baby steps, you know, don't take on too much too soon so that you lose interest. And just relax and enjoy it.
That's true. Very true. Do you have any tips for eating well for individuals who enjoy dining out?
I still like eating out. I do like for people to wait on me. I don't eat a lot, but I still like doing it nonetheless. And I think in general, just to watch the appetizer menu, there tend to be lots of unhealthy options for appetizers, so watch out there. To eat dishes that are based in tomato sauces or broths as opposed to cream. And in fact, I just read an article yesterday that said if you're ordering a soup, make sure it's a soup based in broth as opposed to cream. So that, you know, that could apply to your main dish as well as your soups. If you're drinking alcohol, just make sure you monitor, because there's something about that extra glass of wine that makes everything look and taste better on a menu. And then if you absolutely must have dessert, then try to share it with somebody else at the table, because there's a good chance that you'll eat as much as you need by sharing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that eating out is much more difficult in terms of eating healthy than it is to eat at home?
Well, I do think it's more challenging. And, in fact, I read another article this week that said for every meal that you eat out per week, you have you've gained 2 pounds per year. So I think that, there's a reason sometimes why a vegetable at a restaurant tastes so much better than the one you made at home, because it's caked in butter, and that's why. So even when you're eating healthy, you know, options at a restaurant, it could be prepared with more fat than what you're used to doing at home.
That's very true. Very true. How has writing Eat In, Not Out impacted you personally?
I think that just in general, I get a lot of, just in terms of writing in general, I get a lot of personal fulfillment in writing, So in terms of changing my life, it's more about just the fact that I really enjoy it and I'm doing something with my life that I enjoy. So so that's kind of a good message, whether it's writing or something else, just to make sure that you're doing at least something in your life that brings you a lot of satisfaction.
You've been very passionate about what you do in terms of getting the message out, living a healthy life and eating right. I know you mentioned something about getting all this at a very young age, and you really were going through a certain process in your life. You pursued nutrition, the study of nutrition when you went to college and so forth. Being that this is a family show, what other things that you've learned from your mom as a gift that was given to you from a standpoint of shaping your life?
I think in general that, my mom has given me a number of gifts. She has taught me that I'm a responsible person who can make my own choices, and she didn't need to intervene and tell me what to do. and that is a gift that I know is hard as a parent to give, to let your own child make decisions for him or her own self. Mm-hmm. And for that, I'll always be grateful. I think she recognized I was this type A independent person from the get-go, and she just let me run with it. But I think, too, ironically, I didn't grow up in a particularly healthy household.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is not an athlete. She does not exercise, and she doesn't eat particularly well. And though that is not necessarily a good thing, it did provoke the curiosity that, okay, what can I do to live a healthier lifestyle and then hopefully embrace those habits for my family? And so, that's something I have done. And I've also spent a lifetime trying to convince her of those benefits as well.
How's that coming along? Do you guys spend a lot of time in the kitchen cooking?
We do some. She doesn't cook as much as she did when she was younger, but she always enjoys it when she comes. Actually, she enjoys it when she comes to visit because I cook for her. And she always says that she leaves feeling like better than she's felt in ages. So we have fun poking fun at that we can eat well, but we eat healthy too.
Yeah. Do you believe in cooking in terms of if you eat heavy on Monday, then perhaps Tuesday, Wednesday eating light from a balancing perspective? Is that a myth, or is there some truth to it, that you can actually maintain your diet? from that
perspective. You know, it's funny. I don't think I consciously do that, but I think just by default I kind of end up doing that because I know if I've had a big, rich filling, like last night I made lamb chops, and that to me is kind of a filling meal, that I'll kind of balance it with something lighter tonight. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I don't think it's something I consciously do.
Yeah.
But I, when I'm planning meals in my head for a week, I kind of go, okay, well, this night it's going to be something big and nice, and then this week we'll probably do, this night will be something easier and lighter. So I think there is some value in doing that.
So there is some value in the law of averaging, I guess, in some way.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yes.
Very interesting. What can we expect from you during the second half of this year?
Well, I'm hoping to get my third book out this fall, which is a how-to for people that are interested in running their first marathon. And this book is not really about so much my philosophy, but rather it follows a number of individuals who ran their first marathon, and some of their stories are just amazingly inspiring, and they have inspired me, so I can't wait to share those stories with others who might be interested in, and maybe not running a marathon, maybe even a half marathon. These people will still inspire you. And then the other thing I'm hoping to do is I applied for the New York City Marathon now that they do have the crazy lottery, and I got in on my first try, so I'm hoping to run the New York City Marathon this fall as well, and I need to start training here pretty soon if I'm going to.
Wonderful. And you are also a triathlete, aren't you? So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I dabbled. I did Boise host and a half Ironman. And in fact, it just happened locally last weekend. And I participated in that race a couple years ago and did a number of triathlons that summer since I was in the shape to do it. And I like the variety of a triathlon, but I will also tell you and be completely honest that I'm petrified at swimming in open water. So I battle with it mentally and physically. I hyperventilate and, you know, race to the safety boat so I don't drown. Yeah. And I think if I embark on more triathlons in the future, I'm gonna need to do something. I know somebody told me I need to just go do hypnosis or something to overcome my fear, because I like the principle of a triathlon. It's just for me, I have this mental problem in the water, and I also like playing tennis. So I'm going, okay, tennis or drowning in the water. That's an easy choice.
How many half triathlon have you participated in?
Well, I did the half Ironman one.
And then
I've done the irregular Olympic length triathlons. I've probably done, you know, four or five of those. And, you know, I've got cousins that are convincing me that one day I will do a full Ironman. But I might, but I don't know when or if.
I think so. I think you're really fired up by a lot of things. And, again, this is part of that psychology thing you were talking about. And so half the battle is won because it's one out of three of the events that's really anchoring you down. And so I'm sure you can overcome that quite easily.
Yeah, I hope so.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, I think, you know, like enjoying a good meal and savoring the food that we eat, we should savor life in much the same way. You know, I got married when I was 39 and moved all around the country in the process of, you know, finding Mr. Right. And I feel that I did lead a lot of my life thinking, okay, you know, the next city there's going to be more men for me to marry. There's going to be, you know, better work opportunities. And I think I probably spent too much of my life waiting for that next job or that next city or that next, you know, boyfriend or whatever it was, whereas now I think I can honestly sit back and say, wow, you know, look at my adorable 8-year-old kid and watch him laugh. And, you know, that is the greatest thing in the world, just to sit and watch him laugh. And so I think that, you know, just living in the moment and savoring life, just like we savor good food, is kind of my recipe for healthy or living a good life.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. I mean, being in the present moment, and rather than thinking too far ahead of time or reminiscing the past, just being in the present moment and enjoying it.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Any final thoughts about Eat In, Not Out?
Well, like any healthy habit in life, I just suggest you take it one step at a time, take baby steps, and don't try to conquer the world overnight, but just, you know, little things go a long way in helping you lead a healthier life, and certainly eating in and cooking at home is one of those things.
Wonderful. Please give us your website address again.
Okay, my website is MelindaHensonNeely.com, and Neely is spelled N-E-E-L-Y. I'm sure you could Google my name and probably it would come up too, but that's where you'll find, you know, more information about my books as well as other tips for healthy living.
And tell us a little bit about your first book, because I thought that was really interesting, talking about finding your life source.
That is really goes to hint at that everybody has different preferences. Everybody, much to your recipe for living a healthy life, everybody has a different recipe for, you know, what makes them tick and what makes them mm-hmm. happy and what makes them healthy. So I provide a number of options for, you know, ways to eat better, ways to exercise, and then other life adventures that kind of make our lives complete. And the intention there is for everybody to, by reading the book, to find their own recipe that really works for them.
Very interesting. This has been a wonderful hour. Melinda, thank you for the great recipe for living that you shared with us just now and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Heidi Thompson. She is the creator of Advanced Attention Development. It is a mind mastery program specially designed for young people. Heidi and I will be discussing about her latest book titled Calm, Focus, Joy: The Power of Breath Awareness. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Melinda, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.